Welcome all. This is Garden Life, and my name is Julie Prochinski. I'm here in the studio with my favorite co-host, Julie Calamine.
Hey, Julie Prochinski.
Good to have you back, Julie.
I always love a morning in the studio with you.
And it is morning, although it's early morning. We're recording this in advance. And in our studio also is a frequent guest, Elizabeth Struby of Whistling Rooster Homestead. And welcome to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much. It's great to finally meet Julie Kay.
She's not just a myth. Maybe she's a legend.
She's the legend. Much more than a myth.
All right. So our show today is called Homesteading Explained, and I thought the perfect person to explain homesteading would be Elizabeth. Elizabeth, on your webpage, it says you are a certified master gardener, homesteader, and SAHM. As a way of introducing yourself to our listeners, explain what all that means.
So the SAHM moniker yes.
I love that.
It's my favorite one. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I made the decision to stay at home when my son was born, and it's been the best thing ever. I got certified as a master gardener shortly after that. I think my son was 10 months when I started that certification program, and I highly recommend it to everybody, even if you're not going to keep up your certification by doing the continuing ed or the volunteering. It is absolutely indispensable information for the North Idaho growing climate, which is very unique and mm-hmm. can be very challenging. And all the resources at the Extension office are wonderful. I know you guys have Jen on
yes.
quite a bit. Jen Jensen does wonderful things at the Extension office. I'm actually teaching a class coming up on April 4th that's all about garden planning. And I've also had some involvement with the Natural Connections events at mm-hmm. the library. Mm-hmm. as well.
That's the first place I met you.
Yes. Yes. They're wonderful events. Highly recommend them as well. So other than that, I don't think anything qualifies me to be a homesteader any more than anybody else.
A big desire.
Yes. The desire to learn and the desire to be self-sufficient. It's all that's required.
That's right. Well, a lot of times I think about what we as Americans have in common because mm-hmm. we are so diverse and different, but it occurred to me that homesteading is part of all of our shared history. And before we were talking about our families going back and how many of them farmed between Julie and Elizabeth and I here. And if you think about it, immigrants, Civil War refugees, Dust Bowl migrants, hippies, preppers, almost all of us have homesteaded. So it's something that we all share in common. So let's get into the meat of it. What are the benefits of homesteading, in your opinion, Elizabeth?
I would be hard-pressed to tell you what isn't a benefit of homesteading. It really is that transformative. It's getting back to the land. It's kind of ditching the idea that the economically focused success of the American dream is the only avenue for your success as a human on this earth. Mm-hmm. Getting back in touch with Mother Nature, living off the land, developing relationships with your community, being a healthier person through your connection to Mother Nature and good, real food.
Right.
And animals, too.
Animals, too. So feeding yourself is a big part of homesteading. Well, the other thing that I was thinking is the self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
I think that this is a really, it's up to interpretation for a lot of people. You're going to do what you're able to in your current situation to be self-sufficient, whether that's learning how to can or gardening or keeping chickens or turning, like we were talking about, turning your waiting room into a classroom. You don't have to wait until you buy a house to start homesteading and developing these skills or owning property. You can live in an apartment and have a balcony garden, or you can live in town and have three chickens, which is totally allowed by most HOAs, and just dip your toes in and do what you're able to. You don't have to do the whole cottage core farm thing to be considered a homesteader.
And you could have a plot at one of the community gardens. They're right? all over the
exactly.
place.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. The school gardens, they need help all summer long. I mean, there's so many options to get your hands in the soil.
Yeah.
self-sufficiency to me also means that you have the ability to not have to buy everything. You can make, like Julie, I know, made yogurt mm-hmm. for years.
I did for a long time. It's really fun.
Yes, and sourdough.
And sourdough.
You had a sourdough. Yeah. And, you know, just I was thinking of the self-care items, like at the farmer's market, all the gals that have, and guys that have lotions and salves mm-hmm. and
oils and herbs and tinctures, all mm-hmm. those, all that good stuff.
Homemade.
One of the things that we focused on very heavily when we were first getting back to the land is developing practical skills as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be related to reducing your footprint. It can also have to do with learning how to repair tools and vehicles, learning how to mend clothing. Things like that that make you less dependent on other systems, which I think that we all felt that dependency in one way or another during COVID.
Right.
It was a very personal experience for a lot of people, especially inland.
Yes.
Saw a lot of those systems and how dependent we were on them.
For sure. And the with the self-sufficiency is sustainability. You know, the idea mm-hmm. that if we want to keep a certain level of
independence
or a style of life, we have to be able to maintain it and continue it.
Yeah.
Sustainable.
And I'll just jump in, and I think this is a benefit that we might not necessarily think of it as a benefit of homesteading, but just the physical requirement of living a life that's spent more outdoors and doing more of your own repairs and that sort of thing. It's a healthy way of being physical, getting a little more exercise and
That's a very good point.
Yeah, you're just a little busier and more in motion than if you're, you know, sitting around in front of the TV or ordering in food or something.
Yeah, that's where you understand how much work it is.
There have been all kinds of studies that prove, you know, the more that you're outside, it is absolutely going to extend your lifespan.
Yes.
That vitamin D, that cardio, it's really, really good for you.
That's right.
Let alone the vegetables.
The other thing that came up with homesteading was alternative power. Do you mm-hmm. have any type of alternative power on your place?
We have some systems that we are waiting to put in place, like solar and water collection. Okay. So I think we've talked about before, our homestead is still largely in its infant stages. And we've kind of just been putting in infrastructure for the first few years. And we are on grid.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of the things I wanted to touch on was, like, there's no homestead police. They're not going to go, hey, you're not collecting any water. You can't be a homesteader. There are stages of involvement for everybody. And there's not one single thing that's going to make you, one day you're going to turn into a homesteader like a butterfly.
Right.
I spent a really long time agonizing over that moment because I was raising a lot of my food. I was growing a massive garden and living a largely very self-sustaining life. And I didn't feel like I could call myself a homesteader. And reflecting on that now seems absolutely ridiculous.
You hold yourself to a very high standard.
Oh, I think we all do in a certain way because it's something that America is really, really proud of, the homestead movement.
That's right. I'm reminded of the permaculture conversation we had and how much information there is out there to help people, like, collect water. Water being a big thing in permaculture and how they move it around and use it. And it's not like you have to rewrite the book. There's all kinds of help out there to help you with your specific problem, if it is a problem.
In this modern age of resources and accessibility and internet and books, there is no better time to start your movement into homesteading. It's rooted in American history.
Absolutely. Julie and I were talking before we spoke, too, about all through history, we've turned to homesteading during hard times, like the Dust Bowl or Victory Gardens as a war effort, back to the land, the hippies and the counterculture living out in the woods, Y2K, COVID, all of them. And preppers, that's something that we all, even though we don't think the same way about political things or political issues, we all want to take care of our families and take care of ourselves and live the best life we can. So with the preparations, you that is a cousin to homesteading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are like infinite reasons why people homestead. Not everybody calls it homesteading, mm-hmm. but there are infinite reasons why people start homesteading. And it's, they're not contrary to one another per se, but they are motivated by different things. And I think it's really important to, not be motivated by fear. We all tend to get motivated by fear in these situations that can be really scary. And it's a big reality check, especially the most recent one being COVID was a big reality check mm-hmm. for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely best to do it from a place of preparation rather than a place of fear.
Right.
Yeah. Like a proactive approach. And mm-hmm. yeah, there's so many examples in the world of people taking care of themselves. And we've talked about the preppers that we read about here. And then there are the other, like in the political realm, the other extreme, which would be intentional community maybe. And mm-hmm. so, or what
that's
used
right.
to be called communes or something.
Sure.
And so across a broad range of ideas and ideals, people want to make their own food and take care of themselves. And it's important.
That's right. And the idea of preparedness is living with intent. So you're intending to take care of your family. You're intending to be ready for that emergency, whatever it is. And that really is kind of an antidote to fear because you're prepared.
I think our personal accountability for taking care of our land as well is much more at the forefront
good.
Of the homesteading movement than it used to be. Like yes. after the Dust Bowl.
yes.
Well, yes. And permaculture fits right into that too. You know,
yes.
trying to have your inputs be local and, you know, input as little as possible and try and work with what you would have. On
exactly.
Land.
And if you can't do it, you know, source locally and support your local businesses, support your local communities. Idaho is one of the absolute best places. I think I talk about this every time we're here. Hunting. Fishing, mm-hmm. foraging.
Mm-hmm.
There is no better place to take advantage of your natural environment than Northern Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
It's bountiful year round. And that's another great way to get into homesteading as well before you own properties. Go out in nature, find some mushrooms, find
mm-hmm.
some berries,
mm-hmm.
go fishing.
There's so much to learn out there as well. And
mm-hmm.
and information everywhere, again, as you explore the area and really come to love it, you really want to learn about it.
It's really true. You left out berries, too.
Oh, berries. Huckleberries.
That's
all
right.
Berries.
Love berries.
Elizabeth, talk about your Whistling Rooster homestead. What does your yearly calendar look out there?
I was actually just thinking about this when I took that picture of my garden on my way out this morning. We're gardening at a higher elevation in a snow belt, so I'm still completely covered in snow. And I think about this climate being limiting sometimes. I feel like we thrash a little bit against the short growing season, but I am so grateful to have a little period of rest during, you know, December, January. We can chill out a little bit before we start seeds. But I would say that I only took about a month off from animal husbandry this year. I butchered over 100 small animals this year to feed my family. And while we don't do large livestock, I did utilize our small livestock. I also fish and hunt and forage. I estimated about 75% of our meat this year.
Wow.
And that's a full-time job.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So it's almost year-round. Took a couple of months off, and I think that's a good happy medium.
Okay, and I need to back up and
yes.
Hear what the definition of small animals is. I don't want the listeners to be scared.
Mm-hmm.
What were your small animals that you were able to harvest?
So this year I did chickens. I also raise rabbits for meat, which I am, if anybody wants to talk about rabbits, just call me. And you'll never get me off the phone.
And, you know, rabbits are very tasty.
They're delicious.
I've eaten a lot of rabbits.
They are so good. They're very easy to raise. I've only been raising rabbits for a little over a year. And it's a very good way to get into homesteading. And they're really easy to keep in town, too.
Sure.
They don't make any noise. They are really, they do really well in small spaces. They don't take a lot of care. They're very self-sufficient.
How long does maturity take for a rabbit?
So gestation in a rabbit is only 30 days.
Okay.
It's absolutely amazing. And then you can harvest what we consider an adolescent rabbit is starting at 8 to 10 weeks. I prefer to harvest around 16 weeks, which is considered fully grown.
A little longer than chicken then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, after butchering so many chickens this year and then being able to do the rabbits, the comparison of the two, I'm like, I don't want to butcher chickens ever again. I would way rather just do rabbits. They're so easy. Easy to process, easy to handle.
All right. Okay. So at least she wasn't rounding up any neighborhood, you know, stray.
Anything. Yeah. No cats this year.
Do you winter garden? Do you have anything under that snow that you moved the snow off of?
You know, I tried to go pick some carrots the other day and they were frozen solid.
Me too. I'm in town and mine are frozen solid.
I picked them for a while. I was actually making salads in December. It's been a really crazy year. We didn't have hardly any snow cover, but I had broccoli. I had some hardy greens, kale. One that I did this year that I really enjoyed was sorrel.
Mm.
I've never grown sorrel, and I'm like a huge fan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love it. Super good for you. It's one of those deep-rooted greens that gets all the good nutrients for you out of the soil. It's very winter hardy.
Mm. Is if I'm thinking correctly about it, is it one that can get away from you a little bit? It really likes to spread.
It can. I have mine in a raised bed, but it's also one that's commonly used in fruit tree guilds and permaculture as well.
Yeah, easy to grow, but it will spread. It likes to
seeds,
spread.
A lot
yeah.
of seeds.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Cold frames? Do you have any cold frames out there?
I don't have any this year. I was thinking about doing some hoops this spring as soon as I can scrape some snow off the beds, but we didn't have any snow cover. So oh. I was just digging stuff out. I didn't even need to cover it until like midway through January.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we also talked about microgreens or sprouts. You do sprouts.
I love sprouts.
Yes.
They're
easy
so
to
good.
Do. And the co-op, like we said, has seeds now. They're mm-hmm. sprouting or microgreen seeds, so you can get them locally.
Yeah. Most of the supplies you can get locally.
Have you started any seeds?
Yes. What have you started?
Nothing. What have you started?
I have done all of my coal crops, brassicas, like Brussels sprouts, all of that. I have done onions. I do onions from seed, bulbing onions. And if
Long
you
time.
Haven't tried it, mm-hmm. I highly recommend it. I really love it. And my son did some peppers and some marigolds, which I know are going to get uncontrollable, but it's fine. He wanted to garden, so that's
yeah,
what we did.
Good for him. He gets to watch it grow.
Yeah.
And where does that happen? Inside your house or is that out in your cold frame?
So I'm up in the attic right now. My greenhouse is passive, so I can't do my warm weather crops out in the greenhouse. But that is something, actually, I was just researching doing like the multiple glazing layers. So like getting a little greenhouse to put in my greenhouse and then having cover domes on the... seed mm-hmm. trays, you mm-hmm. get this inception of mm-hmm. mm-hmm. greenhouse effect. I was thinking about trying that this spring and see, like, how early can I put my tomatoes out?
You have a greenhouse on your property, a mm-hmm. standing greenhouse, but it's passive.
It is passive.
So you would do that inside
yep.
that greenhouse.
Go ahead and get them started indoors, probably get
sure.
them germinated
yes.
For the warm weather crops and then move them out into the greenhouse for hardening off.
Yes. I don't start till mid-March. I don't
yeah.
start my seeds because it's just too early for me.
Yeah.
Our greenhouse is stuffed full of stuff right now, and I have to find room for the seeds, and there's a lot of remodeling that has to happen before I can start my seeds. But I have found that I don't go too early.
Yeah, because sometimes going too early is a problem.
Things
yes. get too far ahead and they get leggy.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a bit of a timing issue.
Yes, yes, it is.
It has to be just right.
That's right. Another part of homesteading is using your land to make money. Mm-hmm. As a moneymaker, share with us how you do that. I know you have a website.
Yes, and a lot of what I do is passive income. So I like to post recipes. I like to do, I post knitting patterns, which is kind of tertiary, but I'm a certified knit and crochet instructor, so I teach online. I've looked into doing some courses, and obviously I teach through the Master Gardeners Association, and that gets me connections to port into my small business.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when you first start out, this gets talked about a lot in the, especially in the online homesteading community. If you are going to start homesteading to make it into your living, it's probably not going to go very well for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to start a homestead and make any money,
mm-hmm.
and especially in the beginning when you're building that skill set, you're investing in infrastructure. It's not a very lucrative process, but I think eggs are a
yes.
Eggs might be something to get into.
Up and coming.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like an internship in life. It takes a while, and then over time, I would imagine you would develop if you were going to develop a, you know, a certain area of specialty, and then you might have some clients that you could
earn
a living from, or educational, that sort of thing. But yeah, I can imagine it's not like you're going to be instantly profitable.
No, not at all.
I think that people also have a really hard time with the idea of animal husbandry as something that is profitable as well. That's not as popular with people who are just starting out homesteading. But if you start breeding rabbits, there is a very high possibility that you will be able to sell kits or breeding trios to other people who are wanting to start a rabbitry or be able to sell rabbit meat. That's, I would consider monetizing your homestead to be more of an advanced skill set, for sure. Build that skill set and then think about how you're going to monetize it.
Mm-hmm. What you want to do, really.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What your interests are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also looking at the market in the area, you know, we do have a lot of growers here, a lot of gardeners, a lot of bedding plants, a lot of places that you can buy those things. So you have to find your niche.
It's cyclical, too. And mm-hmm. that's not something to be discouraged by either. I raise and sell heirloom garden seedlings every year. I've sold them in the thousands on certain years. And last year, I think I sold 10.
Wow.
Yeah, it's all cyclical.
Sure.
But trying to go into homesteading with the idea of monetization can really suck the joy out of what you're doing.
I was about to say that very thing. I could imagine that would take the fun out of it pretty quickly if you were struggling to make that your main income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the most important investment in your homesteading journey is investing in the joy and the thriving of your family first.
Yes, and learning that self-sufficiency and growing confident little people and mm-hmm. adults and all that. Yes.
And loving your homestead, wanting to be home, wanting to make it your safe space.
Yeah.
You know, your paradise.
It's a very natural progression.
Absolutely. It takes a long time to do that, but when it happens, it's very joyful.
Yep.
So, Julie and I, we want to welcome Elizabeth as the joining our KRFY volunteer team. She just finished broadcast training, and she's a fully fledged volunteer. So what are you interested in doing for KRFY?
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on the gardening show so much. It's been so enjoyable. One of the things that I really would like to maybe bring some focus to through a show or some short segments is homeschool resources in the community. Maybe do a little, you know, this is what's going on, that's available, events that homeschoolers might be interested in, because I homeschool myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Homesteading is an absolutely fantastic setting for homeschooling. And having people come on and talk. There are a lot of homeschool organizations, clubs, co-ops, resources in the Panhandle, and just nurturing that a little bit through the radio.
I Great. Love this idea.
Yes, it's we wonderful.
It would be such a resource for the community for you to do that. I think that's fabulous.
My son is 5. We're just getting into his first year of established curriculum, and I'm doing a calendar year. So we're just getting into his first established year of curriculum, and my mind has been cranking about it for sure.
Recently. I bet. And, you know, the library has a lot of resources. Even the public school has a whole resource for the homeschool people to help them out. So yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Really does. Well, You know, there's so many ways of getting into homesteading. And if a listener is taking in all the areas we've talked about, whether it might be gardening or some form of permaculture, animal husbandry, you know, enjoyment of the outdoors, etc. I don't know. I'm wondering if you might have recommendations for how to start small, what people might think about. They may not want to start seeds. They might want to go to a nursery. But how did you start? Did you start just with plants or how did it go?
I started by purchasing a crumbling homestead, which is everything I talk about not doing. It was a really, we were just desperate to get back out in the country because that's what we wanted for our son. I actually got pregnant a month after we bought our homestead. So that was like a whole like can of worms all at once, right? But the first year I started my garden, I think it was 20 by 30 enclosed, and I started everything from seed. I had no experience.
That's pretty big, actually. Isn't
it was
it?
Bold.
I bet you were busy.
Yeah, I was. But that whole trial by fire thing, it works for some people. but I did. I started with gardening. I had always had chickens, so we had chickens when we moved in there. Actually, we moved our chickens from Hayden.
Oh,
we lived in a subdivision in Hayden, and we moved our chickens to the homestead, so we already had that. Got really involved with the garden, and then I just started foraging my buns off, doing a ton of foraging, and then I kind of forayed into animal husbandry. But that, utilizing your local resources, I think, is a fantastic way to get started. Community gardens, going and volunteering and learning things, Master Gardener program, Master Naturalist program, Master Food Preserver.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know there was such
yes,
a thing.
There yes, is.
Wow.
You can concentrate on canning, dehydrating, freeze drying, and they actually have two freeze dryers. I think at the, I want to say the Clark Fork Extension. I might be wrong.
Bonner's Ferry. I know they have a really strong extension.
It might be Bonner's Ferry. They have freeze dryers that you can actually experiment with there at the UI Extension. So. Yeah, turning your waiting room into a classroom. Just starting small.
And foraging, getting out in the woods.
Yes.
Fishing.
Yeah.
Foraging, maybe hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those things. That's a good way to start, too. Fill your freezer with huckleberries.
There you go. Or, any of it. Fish, game, etc.
Yes, we went to Dvorak last year and got a bunch of fish.
Oh, fun.
And we're still eating them out of the freezer.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
That is nice. It's just, there's nothing like putting your own meat in the freezer.
Well, and fishing is really accessible for a lot of people.
Yes.
That other things might necessarily be a little more difficult to get into.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a $20. I traded a loaf of bread for my favorite fishing pole. And you just go get a couple of lures and hit the lake. I think a fishing license for residents, like $35.
That's right.
So
yeah. Yep. Maybe not even. It's really inexpensive, but I won't quote because I can't remember. But it's not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great fish that taste great up here in the north.
Heck,
absolutely.
Yeah.
A crumbling homestead. So you have to, I think that's the reality for a lot of people.
It's
is
a little
that
harsh.
That's what you can
it's pretty accurate.
Afford.
Yeah.
You know?
We got a really good deal. My husband's a contractor, so we bought what we felt we were comfortable getting into, but it is an old log cabin. It was, speaking of homesteaders, I believe that was a property that somebody was trying to prove.
Oh.
The cabin was built, it's ancient, from timber that was harvested off the land, and there just was not any infrastructure when we moved in.
Mm.
It was a cabin, and it was on the grid.
You know, gals, I really think that Elizabeth's show should not be about homeschooling. It should be the homestead hour. It sounds like there would be something new every week
that would be
very exciting.
Absolutely.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, that would be great. I was thinking with the alternative energy, the first thing I thought of was a clothesline.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mine's in my living room right now.
Yeah.
Over my wood stove.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, that's our sheets would be a little stiff right now.
Yeah, you have to iron them when you hang them out like that.
Do you know, my husband can't tell the difference between line hung clothes and dryer clothes. You know, the smell is different.
Yeah. Oh,
he can't tell the difference.
Oh.
I'm like, that's really sad.
Maybe COVID did that.
I don't know.
All that work, honey.
It's
do it for you.
And that, like, not to go off on a tangent, but just that little, that smell that you get off of your sheets after they've been hanging on the line and you crawl into bed after a long day of chopping wood and feeding kids and animals, like, that just is the little tiny picture of homestead joy for me.
There you go.
I agree.
And I hope everyone listening here knows that smell. And if you don't, maybe that's your entree into homesteading.
Yes.
You start drying a few things outdoors and see what that smells like and get you going.
That's a good way to start, Julie. So anything else you want to add, Elizabeth, to share with our listeners about your journey, your experience? Encouraging them or giving them ideas on how to begin, you've already done.
Yeah, I think my main point was not to feel so pressured to like to output a product when you're getting into homesteading.
Okay.
You don't have to be product or like tangible result focused when you're getting into homesteading. It's a very personal process, and you can start that internally by developing skills. Because homesteading is not just food and meat and property. It's also being self-sufficient, living within your means,
mm-hmm.
Being resourceful. All those things that we kind of lost in the onset of modern society.
Right.
Getting back to our resourceful roots and developing that internally.
That's right.
When you're starting out.
Boy, I feel like there ought to be... I don't want to put pressure on anybody, but I'm starting to feel like there ought to be a homesteading checklist. Not that you have to check everything off, but all the many possibilities. We've talked about letting your clothes dry on the line. I just had the thought maybe thrifting counts as homesteading.
Yes, absolutely. Reusing, absolutely.
Right?
Bartering. Sustainable. Bartering,
yes.
Yep.
And yes, I mean, there's so many things that would count, and then we could all feel really happy, even if you didn't check every box on that homesteader's list.
Yeah, well, at least you know the list.
Yes, at least you'd have a list of possibilities.
Know where to go. So, Elizabeth Struby, certified master gardener, homesteader. Give us some your webpage information and how people can contact you if they're interested, and let us know what class you're teaching coming up.
Yes, that's going to be the garden planning class at the Sandpoint Extension office up there at the fairgrounds. It's on April 4th, and we are going to cover putting together a hard copy planner for planning your garden, which I think is essential in this challenging climate. And I run my little blogs called The Whistling Rooster Homestead. I post a ton of recipes. I just share about the things that I've learned in my experience, because that's how I learned
mm-hmm.
to be a homesteader. Getting into homesteading was from people's shared experiences. So I share mine online, and that's the whistlingroosterhomestead.com. And yeah, that's where you can find me. Reach out. I'd love to chat.
Well, that's great. I read this one quote that, you know, of course we should all be homesteading, learn to take care of ourselves and all of our kin. But it's a way to use land to create some of what we need to survive, and then we begin to thrive. And yeah. I really think that's true. When you connect with that place and your place in the world, it's all uphill from there.
Julie, I don't think we've asked you what activities you use in this life that you would consider homesteading. What
yes.
sort of things are
oh,
you
gosh.
Doing?
Oh, gosh.
I was going to ask you guys that.
Well, always growing a garden. You know, I've always had a garden, so I always feed my family, more or less. I don't worry about feeding, you know, getting everything from our garden, because we have so many resources around here that we can trade or buy from other gardeners, professional gardeners. And I have a clothesline.
And you've got a hunter in the family.
I've got
I think.
A hunter. We're both fisher people.
That's right.
We're huckleberry pickers.
Cooking too.
Yes.
Cooking from scratch is a great way to get into homesteading.
You know, I was thinking about all the recipes I make that you can buy in a box, but they're so much better when you make them yourself, like the yogurt, Julie. I bet your
totally.
Yogurt's dynamite.
It has what? Always been much better than any store
yes.
yogurt. Yes,
yes,
it is.
That's the nature of it. You don't have all those unidentifiable ingredients
and
in
it's
there.
More affordable. nine so times true. Out of 10, it is more affordable for you to make your own food, regardless of what it is.
Sure.
Has anybody made cheese? I've made cheese, and that's pretty fun, too.
Oh, I've never made cheese.
I've made soft cheeses.
Yeah, me too,
they're
the
fun.
Soft ones. They're
and
easy.
Butter.
Oh, yep, butter's easy.
Cool.
I'm lucky. I have a neighbor who has a milk cow, so I don't have to have one.
Oh, you are lucky.
Yes.
You can't leave your farm if you have a milk cow.
It's true.
Oh, well, this has been great. Julie, thanks for coming in and joining us. And Elizabeth Struby with the Whistling Rooster Homestead, thank you for coming in again. We sure love talking to you.
Thank you, guys. It's been awesome.
And I will say this, listeners, because you're not here in the studio, you can't see Elizabeth, but she's just this beautiful person with rosy cheeks, and she just looks so full of life and health. She's just like a little angel here in the studio. And if that's what happens when you homestead, I want that.
That's so sweet. It's the vitamin D, I promise.
Bet. All right. Well, good interview, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Mm-hmm.